holding on your bays on the bays, the third line of the wide line, which is the widest line that is near the bottom. Continuing with Daoshin Megillah, it says, Ishi Yehudi Hayu Vashushan Abir of a grammar, Ishi Mini. Starts off by saying it's Ishi Yehudi, which sounds like it means he's from Shevet Yehuda, but then it continues, then it describes that it's Ishi Mini, which means he's from Shevet Yemen. So first of all, the question is, Ma'ita Amar, what exactly is the Pasuk saying? The Pasuk lists several of his ancestors, Ben Yor, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, if the Pasuk is coming to tell us his Yichus, Liyachs of Azal ad Binyamin, then it should be going all the way back to Binyamin. We find them in a number of places in Tanakh. When it wants to say somebody's Yichus, it goes all the way back to the name of the Shevet he comes from. Ishimini means he's like a member of Shevet Binyamin, but say that he's Ben Binyamin. And second of all, Marshall asked part of the question is also why does the Pasuk pick out only a few of his ancestors? And the Targum actually lists 10 of his ancestors going all the way back to Shoal alone. Shoal is 500 years after, 700 years, whatever, after Binyamin. So the Pasuk only lists three or four of them, Ben Yor, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish. Ela Maishnohani, so what's the difference? That it's only listing these few ancestors. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kulon al Shmoinikru, because all of them are actually, it's all on his name. In other words, when the Pasuk says Ben Yor, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, it doesn't just mean that he's the son of Yor, he's the son of Shimi, and so forth. It means each of these is a title for Mordechai himself because of what he accomplished. Ben Yair Ben Shahir Einahem Shah Yisrael B'Tfilah. So he's called Ben Yair, the Yair Meloshon Light, because he lit up the eyes of the Jewish people with his tefillahs. Ben Shimi, Ben Shashama El Tfilah. So I mean the son who Hashem listened to his tefillahs. And Ben Kish, Shehikish, Al Shari Rachmim, Ben Kish, means that he knocked on the gates of Rachmim, which were closed at that point, V'niftechuloy, and they were opened up for him.
They were really the names, the real names?
No, so in other words, the point is, yeah, he had an ancestor named Shimi, he had an ancestor named Kish, and so forth. But why out of all of his ancestors is the Megillah picking after these? Because these tell us something about Mordechai himself. Yeah. In the Slichos, for Tainus Esther, it puts it a little differently. It is called Ben Kish. Shehikish al-Balsas Beis HaSefer is the expression there, that he knocked on the doors of the Chadarim, of the schools, to tell the kids to come join him to learn and to daven together. Okay, now the next question, Korila Yehudi, Amami Yehudika. See, first it calls him Yehudi, which the Gemara is assuming at this point that the word Yehudi doesn't just mean a Jew. It means specifically somebody from Shevet Yehuda. So it sounds like he comes from Shevet Yehuda. But Korila Yemini, but then he calls him Yemini, Amami Binyamin Kasi, which means he comes from Binyamin. So what is it? Well, that's going to be one of the answers. But first, Amar of Nachman, Mordechai Muchte Bini Muse Haya. Mordechai was crowned with his Nimus. Now what does that mean? Rashi says that Nimus is the Greek word for a name. Like related to the word like chalonimos, for example, means a beautiful name and so forth. So it means he was crowned with many names. Like he's prominent for the fact that he's from Binyamin and he's from Yehuda, because as the Gemara is going to say, yeah, like you just said, you know, he had one parent was from Binyamin and the other from Yehuda. There's a bunch of other different explanations of what this Muchta Bini Musa Haya means as well. One of them is that he was crowned with good deeds. I mean, Nimus also means like the proper way to do things. In modern Hebrew, Nimus is politeness. So he's crowned with like he acts like a king. So therefore he's called after the name of Yehuda, because Yehuda was the king among all the Shvatim.
Nimus is also nicknamed.
No, it is. No, Nim'as is rejected. That's different. Yeah. So that's another one. That's another thing that it means. Muchta bini Musa Haya. There's another explanation that the Mepharshim say it means he was distinguished for his knowledge of Torah. The ultimate Yehudi. He's like the ultimate among the Yidden. And then there's an interesting thing. Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz writes in Yaris Devash that it means that Mordechai, alone out of all the Jews in Shushan, walked around proudly as a Jew with talis and tefillin and all. And in fact, he explains over there, Davka, therefore he's called after Yehuda, because we find Yehuda is associated with talis and tefillin. He's Muchta Bini Musa, and therefore he's called Yehudi.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know that. I don't really like the word shvatzes, but okay, anyway. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rabbah Babachana Amar Rabbi Yisroel Ben Levi, Ovim B'Minyamin V'Imei Mi'Yehuda. His father was from Binyamin, his mother was from Yehuda. So therefore he can be called Yehudi as well after his mother, because the fact that his mother is from Yehuda also has significance. It means he had the strength of Yehuda in him as well. Rabbanan Amri, the Rabbanan says, another reason why the Pasuk says it this way. Mishpachas Misgaris Zubazu, the two families of Binyamin and Yehuda, who made up most of the Jews in the exile at that point, They were like competing with each other. Which one of us is it to our credit that there's such a person as Mordechai? It's not just the fact that he's descended from both Mordechai and Binyamin. It's more than that. The family of Yehuda said, "I'm not Gorim to Misyal and Mordechai. I'm the one who caused that Mordechai was born." That David did not kill Shimi ben Gera. The pasuk in Shmuel Beis tells the story that Shimi ben Gera, who was a relative of Shaul, came out when David is running away from Absalom. Shimi ben Gera came out and cursed him. And one of his generals, Yoav, I think, or whoever it was, says, you know, get rid of the guy, kill him. How are you talking? He should be so chutzpahdik to the king. And David tells him, leave him alone, and Hashem amalek halal, etc. What happened? So Shimi stayed alive, and eventually Mordechai descended from him. Therefore,
did David have what?
No, not necessarily, but at least the fact that he spared him is what made it possible that later on, Mordechai came out of him. So Shevet Yehuda is proud of the fact it's our ancestors doing that caused that there's a Mordechai in the world. That's true, but that was afterwards, sure. But then, meanwhile, Shimi has plenty of time to start a family, to have children, etc. Yeah, and he didn't tell him. He told him, you know, look out for this. This guy's a dangerous guy. Look out, you know. Eventually, he's gonna end up condemning himself by his actions. But whatever, you know. Meanwhile, yeah. Or Meshpachas Binyamin, whereas the family of Binyamin said, on the contrary, be nice to Asi. He comes from me, after all. I'm the one who gets the credit for there being a Mordechai. Rava says it was actually the other way around. Both Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin were blaming each other for the whole situation. Namely, Knesset Yisrael Amar Le'idach Kisa. The rest of the Jewish people were all saying the other way around. They said, Ra'uma Asa Le'Yehudi, look what the Yehudi, the member of Shevet Yehuda, did to me, that he caused such tzaris, U'mashilim Le'Yemini, and what the person from Shevet Binyamin called me tzaris. Namely, what does that mean? Ma also the Yehudi, what the Yehudi did, delay katle David the Shimi, that on the contrary, people were saying, you know, maybe David should have killed Shimi. Dis Yalimine Mordechai, Demik Nebe Haman. Mordechai was born from Shimi, is descended from Shimi. He ended up starting up with Haman. The Jews of that time felt, like we were talking about yesterday, that, you know, the whole tzara began because Mordechai didn't want to bow down to Haman. So there were some Jews who felt, you know what, it would have been better if there had never been a Mordechai in the world, if there had never been a Shimi. If Shimi hadn't then been allowed to live, then we wouldn't have had a Mordechai racing zich with Haman. Well, mashilim le Yemini, and they also said, look what the Yemini paid me back. That Shaul from Shevet Binyamin did not kill Haman, who ended up causing trouble to the Jews. So, like, in other words, the Yehuda and Binyamin thing is kakeh. Like, they were saying on the contrary that both Yehuda and Binyamin have to share in the blame for this whole situation having developed.
Yeah.
And one thing
has nothing to do with Haman, really.
Well, one thing, no, because it does, because if Shaul hadn't killed, it had killed Agag, then there wouldn't have been a Haman. But one thing is, before we talk about part of the difference, whether we're saying that they took credit for Mordechai or whether they're blaming Mordechai for the whole situation, part of the question, we learned back on Daf Vav, a machloikas, the Gemara had mentioned a machloikas, should you start up with Rishayim when they're being successful? We had one opinion that says don't, and we had the other opinion that says do. One way of looking at it was, we said, it depends whether you're a Tzadik Gomer or not. So part of the issue is over here, is Mordechai a Tzadik Gomer or not? Later on, we're going to have on Daf Tes Zayin that some of the Sanhedrin, some of the Mikfirushim men and Mikfir Sanhedrin, that some members of the Sanhedrin disagreed with Mordechai's way of doing things. Evidently, according to them, he's not a Tzadik Gomer. He shouldn't have been starting up with Haman.
But wait a minute. We just said when the whole Jewish people in such a sakana that we shouldn't start with
No, because in other words, the point is, should Mordechai have started up with Haman? Maybe he should have bowed down to him. Especially, at least, okay, fine, not when he has a getchka with him, maybe, but if he's just bowing down to him out of respect, like we were saying yesterday, Manoah Halevi says that at one point, for example, Haman took off his idol to see if Mordechai would bow, and he still wouldn't. You know, maybe then, maybe people then felt, at least, you know, maybe Mordechai shouldn't have taken it that far. Anyway. But the Jews are blaming Mordechai in the sense that he should have realized that. Okay, we're not saying they were right. We're just saying that there is a reasonable.
You know,
yeah.
The fact that he didn't bathroom was just a pretext. Haman had in mind being a descendant of Amalek.
Well, maybe. I mean, but yeah, fine. But you know, what got him to do it was, you know, that he's angry at Mordechai, and that, you know, he took it out. Whatever. That's what everybody was thinking anyway. Rabbi Yochanan, Amar La'olam b'Binyamin Kalsi. Rabbi Yochanan says, really, after all, Mordechai did descend from Shevet Binyamin, but Amai Karele Yehudi. So why is he called a Yehudi? Not because he's from Shevet Yehuda, but because Al Shum Shekofa Baba Dezara, because he denied the power of Avodah Zarah. Shekola Kofa Baba Dezara, Nikri Yehudi. Anybody who denies, who fights against Avodah Zarah, can be called a Yehudi. Kedichtiv, like it says about Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, Isai Gurin Yehudayin Hulu. There are certain men Yehudayin who don't want to bow down to your statue. Now, the Gemara actually discusses, and so Tosfos points out over here, actually, from a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that in fact, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were not descended from Shevet Yehuda, but they're being called Yehudayin. Why? Because a Yehudi is somebody who denies Avodah Zarah.
Every one of us.
Well, that's the point. Any Yid who does deserves to be called a Yehudi. He deserves to be called by that title. Other Mefarshim argue, I think Marshall points out that there's a different place where it seems to imply that they were descended from Yehuda, but still, the Gemara's point is, they didn't have to identify them Dafka as from Shevet Yehuda. They're identifying them as that because, yeah. Further on this topic about Yehuda referring to somebody who denies, who fights against the Avodah Zarah, Reb Shimon ben Pazi, if you have a pasuk with Divrei HaYamim, when Reb Shimon ben Pazi would start teaching something from Divrei HaYamim, Amar Hachi, he would say like this. Now, Divrei HaYamim, the first nine or so chapters of Divrei HaYamim are basically a list. They're basically lists of family trees. It starts out, the first paragraph of it is like a recap of the family trees from Chumash Bereishis, and after that, it starts going through the family trees of the individual Shvatim. There's many people mentioned over there who are not mentioned anywhere else in Tanakh. There's many cases where Pasuk will start with referring to a person by one name, and later on, all of a sudden, will switch to a different name. The Medrash explains that, in fact, Divrei HaYamim is meant for Darshanim. So, Reb Shimon ben Pazi used to say, Kol Dvarecha Echad Heim, everything that you write, all the things that you write in this Sefer are all one thing, meaning that it happens a lot of times that a person in this Sefer is called by many different names, but under Yodin, the Darshan, and we know how to Darshan them. Here's an example. Pasuk says, the Ishtei HaYehudiyah, his Yehudiyah wife, the previous Sukkim are referring to Kalev, his Yehudiyah wife, Yolda gave birth to Es Yered Abi Gedur, Yered the father of Gedur, Ves Chever Abi Soichoi, Ves Yikusiel Abi Zanoyach, and the Pasuk finishes off, Ve'ela B'nei Bisya Bas Parai, these are the daughters of Bisya, the daughter of Parai, Ashalokach Mored, who Mored, Mered, whatever, married. So what is it? Is it Kalev or is it Mered? And why is she? And first it calls him Ishtei HaYehudiyah, and then it calls her Bithya. What's going on over here? So, Amai Kari Lo Yehudiyah, why is she called Yehudiyah? Al Shum Shekofra Avodah Zarah, because she denied Avodah Zarah. She was Pare's daughter, but she realized that Avodah Zarah is Shrus, and then decided to become a Jew. Dichti Vateret Bas Pare Lucha Sadayar, the Pasuk says that the daughter of Pare went to bathe in the Nile, Va'am Rabbi Yechon, and she Yodah Lucha, it's Megilul Beis Aviyah. It means that she went down to the river to wash herself off from the Tumah of the Avodah Zarah of her father's house. Rashi says that she was actually toveling for Gerus. A Gerus, a tovel in water, so she's literally toveling in the river for that. Other Mefarshim talk, this is before Matan Torah, there's no real concept of Gerus yet, she's toveling to get, like, the filth of Avodah Zarah off her. Whatever. But the point is that she denied Avodah Zarah, therefore she can be called by the title Yehudiyah. Then the pasuk continues, Yolda? What do you mean she gave birth? The Gemara is going to assume now, and the Gemara is going to explain in a minute, that all these names in the pasuk are not actually... And the symbol meaning their names of people, but the Gemara is going to explain that all of them are nicknames for Moshe Rabbeinu. So she didn't give birth to him, but Rabbi Yerbisa, she raised him, she adopted him, she didn't give birth to him. But Loi Malach, this teaches you, Shekol Amagado Yotem Yisema Vosef Beise. Anybody who raises an orphan, a boy or a girl orphan in their house, Malal Avakosov Kila Yaldi, the Pasuk Taka considers it as if they bore them. So therefore, Bastia can be said that she gave birth to Moshe.
Because
she raised him. He wasn't literally a Yotzeh, both his parents are alive, but he had to be separated from them, yeah. What do these various names mean? Yered to Moshe, V'lama Nikva Shema Yered, why is Moshe called Yered? She Yared Lahem Yisrael Mon B'yama, because Mon came down for the Jewish people in his time, and in his chutz, as we learned in Tainis. The Vilna Gaon on the side says here a little differently, that he, Yered is Meloshin, that Horid, he brought down the Torah to the Jewish people. Dur means she got up here to say in Shah Yisrael, he fenced in the breaches of the Jewish people. When the Jewish people are doing wrong, he fenced it in. He got them to stop. Chever means she chiber et Yisrael lavi and shebashamayim, means he joined together the Jewish people with Hashem. Soichai means she nasol ham Yisrael kisukah. He became like a sukkah protecting the Jewish people when Hashem was upset with them. Yikusil means Shekivu Yisrael Lakeil V'yamav, that the Jewish people hoped for Hashem in his time, because they have to hope every day for the mon, every day they have to learn to trust in Eibishter that the mon will fall that day. Zonoyach Sheyizniach Havanesei and Shei Yisrael, he caused the Eibishter to forget, to abandon the Aveiros of the Jewish people. Now, we didn't just, in the pasuk, it didn't just have the names, it had a bunch of Avis over there. Et Yered Avigdor, what was it? Et Yered Avigdor, Et Sever Aviso. So we skipped all the Avis. So what does that mean? Avi, Avi, Avi. What does it say? Avi three times. It means Av B'Torah, Av B'Chochma, Av B'Nevius. It means he's a father to the Jewish people in Torah. He's the greatest Talmud Chacham. Av B'Chochma in wisdom, and Av B'Nevius, that he's the father of all the other Nevius. Therefore, the three Avi. The Medrash actually says that each of these names that it mentions in the pasuk, a different member of his family actually called him by these names. It mentions that his father gave him one of these names, his mother called him by a different one, and Miriam called him by another one, Aaron by another one. Although the Medrash continues, of all the names that we have for him in the pasuk over here, the Torah only ever refers to him as Moshe. We only have these other names in this one pasuk in Devar Yomim. Why? In honor of Batya that she raised him and named him Moshe. And the pasuk finishes off. So what do you mean? V'chi mered shmoi? His name was mered v'alei kolev shmoi. It means Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Yavei kolev shemored ba'atzas meraglim. Let kolev come who rebelled against the plans of the spies. V'yisas bas pare and let him marry bas pare shemored v'gvul beis aviyah, who rebelled against the idols of her father's house. And it was both of them are rebels against the wrong kind of thing. So they were good shidduch. That's why the pasuk, when it finishes off with her name Bisya, which she was called that because she became the daughter of Hashem. Therefore, appropriately to that, we call him over here, instead of by his real name, Kalev, we call him Mered, in honor of the fact that he rebelled against the spies. He did. The Gemara in Sota talks about that. Yeah, there's other psukim in Divrei Yomim that indicate that he married Miriam. So either he had two wives, or it means that after Miriam passed away, he married Batya. Incidentally, I mean, everybody always calls it Batya, because the Medrash Darshan, that she was called that because she's Bas Kalev, she's the daughter of Hashem. But in the pasuk, it actually says Bisya. Anyway. So there, the point is, therefore, we see another example of where somebody who goes against Avodah Zarah is called a Yehudi, just like Mordechai. Next, back to the Megillah. Asher Hoglo miYerushalayim. It says about Mordechai that he was exiled from Yerushalayim. What does that mean? Amar Rabba Shagola meAsma. It means that actually he went into exile on his own. Because otherwise, the pasuk should have said, what does the pasuk say? Asher Hoglo miYerushalayim im haGoyla. He was exiled from Yerushalayim with the exile that went with Yechaniah. Implies, like, he's not actually part of the exile. He voluntarily went along with them. Which Rashi says, we have a similar thing. We have later on, Bat Korban, Yirmiyahu didn't, Nebuchadnezzar had given orders that Yirmiyahu is not to be harmed. But nevertheless, Yirmiyahu voluntarily went into exile with the rest of the Jewish people. So similarly over here with Mordechai. Why Taka? Different Beforeshim talk about different ideas. One idea would be that he wants that there should be leadership for the Jewish people there. Another idea is that Trakez. We know the Chorosh and the Maskir, 1,000 great Talmid Chachamim were taken to Babel at that time. Trakez, he figured, I want to go to Mahavid Golos, the Makom Torah. I want to go in Golos to the place where the Talmid Chachamim are. Next, the pasuk says, "Vayhi omen es Hadassah." He was raising Hadassah. Now, Kari lo Hadassah, Kari lo Esther. She has two names. Why? What was her real name? Tanya. Rav Meir omen Esther Shma. Rav Meir says her real name was Esther. V'loma nikra Shma Hadassah. Al shem haTzadikim. She's called that as because Hadassah is a name for Tzadikim. Shenikru Hadassim. The Tzadikim are called Hadassim in the pasuk because they're like they're as beautiful and fragrant and wonderful to have around as a myrtle bush. Like there's a pasuk that describes Hashem, so to speak, standing among the Hadassim, meaning among the Tzaddikim who are in Babel. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Hadassah was her real name on her birth certificate. So why is she called Esther? Hashem shows Maseret Berah because she hid her words. She didn't tell what people she's from. Rav Nechemiah Omer Hadassah Shema. Rav Nechemiah says again also that her name was Hadassah. V'lam Nikras Esther, Shoyu Umas Ha'olam Koyer Nosal Shu Istahar. The nations of the world called her after Istahar. What is Istahar? Rashi says it means moon. Meloshin Sihara is the Aramaic word for moon. Other Meforshim, the Midrashim and whatever that say that Istahar is either the Persian name for Venus, or the planet Venus, planet, which is brilliant in the sky, so therefore like she's as beautiful and brilliant as that, or possibly that it's from a word for star. The word star might be related to the English word star. Then different before I forget who says, but yeah. Ben Azayomer, here's another reason. Esther Layaruchov, like Sarah Hoysa Elabaninis. Kadasa. Esther was neither unusually tall nor unusually short. She was average height, like a myrtle, which is an average height bush. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karchaimer, here's another reason. Esther Yerakroikas Haisa. Esther was actually greenish, yellowish, like we usually think that Esther was very beautiful, and the Gemara is going to talk about that later on Daf Tesvav. But here we're saying that actually she was greenish, like she had a sallow complexion. Therefore, she's like a mortal in that sense, like greenish. But b'chut shochesed mashachalaya, but there was a thread of kindness that the Eved put over her. That, in other words, like normally, if you just thought objectively, she wouldn't look very nice. But because the Eved gave her this grace, therefore she looks very beautiful to everybody. And one of the Mepharshim says that, actually, I mean, it's not a theater. The Pasuk does describe her as Anara Toivat Mare, but the word is, she was originally beautiful, but then with everything that she had to undergo in the palace and everything, all the difficulties of having to keep kosher and Shabbos and everything, as we're going to discuss soon, that made her look sickly.
So
we're going to get to that soon, right? Yeah. Next, the Pasuk says, Ki ein lo avim, she didn't have a mother, she didn't have a father or a mother. But then the pasuk continues. So why does the pasuk have to continue? When her father and her mother died, it says that Mordechai took her, and when else would he have taken her in? So Amar Abacha, it means Ibarta Meisavia. It means that when she was conceived, her father died. Yoladata Meisaima. When she was born, her mother died. So in other words, Ki Ein La Av Va'Em. She never had somebody who's capable of being called her father or her mother. He can be called her father as soon as she's conceived. Her mother can be called her mother as soon as she's born. She never had that.
When she was
conceived, her father died, and when she was born, her mother died. So therefore, she never lived to see her father never had a chance to be her father. Her mother never had a chance to be her mother, basically. Yes. It's an interesting thing, actually. You see from this Gemara, then, that her father is called her father as soon as she's conceived. The mother is only called her mother when she's born. Different Mepharshim talk about, there are actually, the Maharal talks about, an idea behind that, is because a baby is considered like part of the mother. Until the baby is born, you can't really consider the baby a separate entity from the mother. So the mother can only be considered a mother after she gave birth. There's a couple of Achronim who talk about there may be implications in this as far as halacha. They talk about it in connection with the halachas, in connection with some of the halachas involving abortion, for example, in connection with some other halachas that we see for certain purposes. A baby is not considered, the mother is not considered the mother of the baby until the baby is actually born.
Yes, the father is after.
The father is after she's conceived, because that's, you know, his contribution to it is over at that point, really, yeah. Why is it clear that Esther had to be an orphan? There's a number of different reasons that are given. The Medrash gives a couple of reasons. One is, in Eicha, we say, Yisayimim Hayinu, we're like orphans in Golos. So the Eivish sent an orphan that says who's going to be the one to save them. Another idea,
they were considered
orphans, so therefore the Eivish sent an orphan to save them. Another idea is that you didn't want to, you know, later on the Gemara is going to discuss that the Jews are going to think, you know what, we have a relative in the palace, we're safe, you know. So you guys mind doing that a little more quietly? We are trying to learn over here. Thank you. The idea is that, you know, they're going to think, you know, well, hey, we have a sister in the palace, we have a close relative, we don't have to worry. She's a Yosef. She has no close relatives among the people. So therefore, like, they're not going to know not to trust in her. You got to trust in the Eved. There's another interesting idea that Mepharshim talk about is that I don't remember who says this, is that she's going to be going up against Haman. Now Haman is descended from Esav, and Esav has this chutz of kibud av v'eim. So anybody else who goes up against him, have you done proper kibud av v'eim throughout your lifetime? But Esther can say, yes, I never had a father or a mother. The kibud av v'eim that I do, is any mitzvah that I do, is in their chutz. That's the biggest kibud av v'eim possible. Like Moses has a similar thing in Kiddushin, that Rabbi Yochanan had a similar level of kibud av v'eim because he had the same kind of thing. He was in the same situation as Esther. He was a double Yosef from when he was born. Yeah. So therefore she's the only one who's capable of going up against Haman and defeating that and then defeating that chutz that he can call on. Next, Pasuk says, when her father and mother died, Mordechai took her to himself for a daughter. Don't read in the Pasuk that he took her for a daughter, but rather Labayis, for a house, meaning for a wife. Yeah. And thus we see a pasuk similar pasuk where we see that the pasuk uses the word bas, but it means a wife. This is in the mashal that Nathan Anavi comes and tells David after the whole story with Uriah and Bathsheba. He comes and tells him a mashal. There's a rich guy who has everything, and then Velarosh Ein Peril is a poor person who has nothing. Ki'im kibs ba'achas kana, except for one little sheep, Ashakana, one little lamb, Ashakana, which he bought by Yechaya, and he kept it alive. Vatig Dalima, Ibanav, Yachtav, it grew up together with him and his sons. Mipita Teichel and Mikhoite Tishta, it ate from his bread, it drank from his cup, Ubacheke Tishkav, and it lay in his bosom, but he was kavat, and it was like a daughter to him. What do you mean? B'shum d'v'cheke tishkab habachle v'bat. What do you mean? Laying in somebody's bosom makes you like a daughter? Usually the expression shachba b'chekecha usually refers to a husband and wife. Ella labayis. So it means that she's like she's like a spouse to him. Because that's the nimshul. He's talking about Uriah, who has one wife, Bathsheba. No, nothing to tell him, David. You have so many wives, and you have to go take away Uriah's one wife. So the same thing over here. When it says that Mordechai took her labas, it means that he took her as a wife. Some of the Parashim also point out there's also the fact that it uses the word lakacha, which lakach means take for a wife. Having said that, though, not everybody agrees that in fact with our Gemara that in fact Mordechai actually married Esther, because then you get into the question, which we're going to talk about over the next couple of days. How is what happens when Esther is taken by Achashverosh and then Yehoreg Val Yaber? So actually, the Melchamos and the Ramban discussed this in the Sugya of Yehoreg Val Yaber in Sanhedrin. The Melchamos says yes, our Gemara is saying she was married. Fine, we have to take that at face value. But fine. What about she's taken by Achashverosh? Well, the Gemara says there. Esther Kalkoil, my boy. She was forced into it. She's passive. She's not active in the act. So therefore, it's not an issue. The Ramban says not necessarily. The Ramban says there's actually two different answers the Gemara gives over there. One is that. The other answer, though, the Gemara gives is la'hana osam shiny, that it's different when the guy wants you to do an avera for his hana versus he's doing it in order to make you be over on the Torah. So the Ramban says, according to the two different answers over there, according to that second answer, it's possible that would disagree with our Gemara over here. Esther was not, in fact, married to Mordechai. Therefore, all you have here, therefore, you don't have the problem of Eishes Ish. So therefore, you don't have the issue of Eishes Ish. All you have is the issue that a Jewish woman is not allowed to be married to a guy.
Because of what?
Because if we say that's what the Ramban is arguing, that based on that Gemara over there, it's possible, according to Rava's understanding of there in the Gemara, of the story of Esther, that Esther was not, in fact, married to Mordechai, not like our Gemara is saying over here.
She was a bat.
She was his foster daughter, but not actually married to him. And different before we can talk about different possibilities that Mordechai wanted to marry her, maybe he didn't have a chance to before all this happened. Anyway, yes. Yeah. Okay, so the pasuk
gave her a gift when she was taken.
We're going to talk about that on Amud Beis. We'll get to that. Next, the eighth Sheba on Aris for Gomer. The pasuk says that she was given seven maidservants to attend to her. Why seven? Amar Rabba Shoy to Moira Behenya May Shabbos. She used those to count the days of the week. Some of Farshim say, Balabatish, the Persians didn't necessarily have a seven-day week, so she needed that, otherwise how's she going to know what day Shabbos is? The Rabbi Yonasan Ivishit says an interesting idea. He says it wasn't that. Fine, the Persians had a seven-day week. She had a problem like this. How is she going to keep Shabbos without everybody realizing that she's Jewish? So what she did is she had a different maidservant for each different day of the week. She had a different maidservant for each different day of the week. Actually, the Medrash says she called them by name that will remind her of the days of the week. So what happens? The six from the weekdays, each of them is only there on a weekday. They figure, okay, Nesama, she works all 7 days. We're not here Shabbos. We don't know what she does. The one from Shabbos doesn't see her working. On the contrary, she figures, okay, she's a queen. She probably doesn't work all week. So that way, her secret is safe. Friday night. Yeah, so Friday is already night time already. You know, you're not going to be doing work by night. Yeah. Next, the pasuk says, "Va'yishaneh v'esnari sever." But the pasuk says that Haggai, the keeper of the hay room over there, he changed her and her maidservants to toiv beis anoshim, to the best of the women's house. What's the best? Amar Rav she'achila Michael Yehudi. So Rav says it means that he gave her Jewish food to eat. Now, how did she do that without everybody knowing that she's Jewish? The fact is, she said, you know, nobody. She doesn't tell what nation she's from. As far as anybody knows, she might be a goyta. But everybody knows that Mordechai did raise her as a foster daughter. So her excuse was, you know what, I grew up in Mordechai's house. I myself, maybe I'm Jewish, maybe not. You can't tell. But I grew up in Mordechai's house eating kosher. If I start eating today's food, it's going to be bad for me. It's not what I'm used to. So therefore, she could get away with it. That's one explanation. Or Shmuel, Amar Shmuel says, on the contrary, Sheachila Kodli de Chaziri. It means that they gave her to. It means that they gave her to eat. Rashi says Kodli de Chaziri means bacon. So what's going on with that? So Rashi says, okay, she had to eat it. She had no choice. But it was an onus, so it wasn't held against her. Similar to the way she's married to Achashverosh, and it wasn't held against her. Tosfos says, on the contrary, they offered her bacon. Chas v'shalom, of course she didn't eat it. And different other Meforshim, the Aruch says that maybe Kodli de Chaziri is not Meloshon Chazir as in pig, but rather Chazir Meloshon Chazeret, as in lettuce. So they gave her heads of lettuce to eat, which is kosher.
Sounds more like Chaziri than
Chazeri. You could say Chaziri, you could say Chazeri. Whatever, yeah. V'Rabbi Yochanan Omer Zer Oynim. Rabbi Yochanan says they gave her seed tea, which is what you were saying, Craig. V'Cheinu Oymer, and thus we find when Jews are in this situation where they're in a Goyish court, and what are they going to eat? It says, V'Chanani Mishol Bazar, Dani Yochanani Mishol Bazarya. V'Hi HaMeltzer Noisa Et Pas Bogam, the waiter would take away the food that was assigned to them, the Tref food, V'Noisim Lahem Zer Oynim, and he'd give them seed tea. So Esther arranged the same thing. Next, the pasuk there. The pasuk describes the beauty treatments that the women underwent before they went to Achashverosh. The pasuk says, "Shisha chadashim b'shemen hamor." They 6 months with shemen hamor. My shemen hamor. Rav Chiya bar Amo Omer stacked. It means stacked is a Greek word, which means Rashi in various places explains that it means balsam oil. Rav Huna Omer shemen zayit shalai hevi shlish. Rav Huna says it's oil from olives that have not yet grown 1/3 of their full growth. So that kind of oil, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, is very good for your skin. Tanya, we learn it right. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, on Pakinon, is Shemen Zayis Shalahevi Shlish. The Mishnah in Menachos describes, the Mishnah in Menachos goes through the description of what kind of oil, what kind of wine, etc., what kind of flour, etc., are and aren't you allowed to use in the Bismik, that's from Menachos. So it lists over there a few different kinds of oil, and one of them, it says, is on Pakinon. The Gersa that we have in the Mishnah in front of us says that actually it's possible. So the Rambam's Gersa, and this is how he passes, is that it's kosher. What's Anpakinon? So we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, Anpakinon is Shemen Zayit Shalahevi Shlish. It's oil from olives that are not yet grown 1/3. V'lama Sokhino, you say, why do they anoint themselves with it? Actually, the Rambam describes in Hilchus Trumas, or Maestros, whatever, that what it means that if you were to press them at this point, you'd only get from them 1/9 of the amount of oil that you would get when they're fully grown.
That's volume,
I guess, yeah. Anyway, the Lama Sachino, you say, why do people anoint themselves with such oil or with stacks, whatever? Shemasher is a sayer, because it causes the hair to fall out. And it smooths and softens the flesh. So this is the kind of thing they had these women perfume themselves with for 6 months. What? It talks about in Mod Katan. It also describes in Hayom Yom. I think it's in Hayom Yom anyway. That the Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe used to use this pasuk as an illustration of what you need before you go in for your chiddush. You need preparation for your chiddush. Shisha chadashim b'shem anamor, 6 months with merirus, with feeling bitter over where you stand b'avoda, and shisha chadashim b'abisamim, and 6 months with perfume, preparing yourself in asei tov, and doing good. Next, the pasuk says, "Ba'erev he bar, ba'boker he shava." In the evening, every girl would come, and in the morning, she'd return. So, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Mignusa Shalaisa Rasha, from the derogatory description of this Rasha that we see, like he's using all these women and throwing them over into the Beit HaNashim Sheni, Lamadnu Shivchai. Incidentally, though, we do learn a positive thing about him. Shalahei Mishamish Mitasa Bayan. He was not having relations by day. That's why the pasuk is saying that each girl was brought to him only in the evening. The Persian say, basically, I mean, before he was a princistic guy, like we had before with the story of Vashti, but after that, you know, after he realized what happened over there, then, you know, he learned to control himself a little.
That would be very tight also.
Next, the pasuk says that he Esther knows his chayim, that Esther found favor in everybody's eyes. Amar Rav Elazar, Malamet Shekalach Shalakalach Abecha, Nin Malaiku Umasai. We see from that that each person felt like she's a member of his nation. So that's how she found favor in everybody's eyes. Nobody knew what nation she's from, but everybody thought that she must be somebody from my nation. Next, the pasuk says, "Vatilakach Esther haMelech Achashverosh haBeit Machusay." Esther was taken to King Achashverosh to his palace. Bachodesh haAsiri, who Chodesh Tevis, in the 10th month, which is Chodesh Tevis. Why Eretz Chodesh Teves? Yerach shenana haguf min haguf. This is a month when one guf has pleasure from another guf. Which means it's cold time of the year. Teves is in the middle of the winter. So in other words, the Rashi says the point of it is that min hashemayim, it was brought about, when should she be brought to Achashverosh and Teves? That way Achashverosh will really want her even more than he would have normally. The Rebbe used to quote this all the time in Sichot and in letters and all, that the deeper idea of it is that we know the famous idea that every time it says HaMelech and the Megillah, it refers to the Eivishter in a deeper sense. So when does Esther, the Jewish people, come El HaMelech HaChashverosh, is B'chodesh Asiri, B'chodesh Tevis, the Guf Nenem and Aguf, it refers to the time when, refers to the time of Mashiach, when we'll see how the Guf is even greater than the Neshama. Nowadays the guf lives off the neshama, and Mashiach and any Moshe Mashiach will also love the neshama will live from the guf. Next, the pasuk says, "Vayev haMelachas Esther Mikol Nashim." That Esther loved, that the king loved Esther more than all the women. Vatisachayim b'chesed l'fanav Mikol Absolah. So she had more grace and favor in front of him than all the virgins. So what is it? Nashim means married women. What is she? What is it? Amar Rav, it means dikish litim tam besula tam. If Achshverosh wanted to have the pleasure of relations with the besula, then he had it with Esther. Tam besula, so tam ba'ula tam. And if he wanted to have the pleasure with a married woman, then he felt that also. You know, he felt whatever, every kind of pleasure he possibly could, basically.
So basically,
what?
The mom for relations.
Okay. Next, Vayasa Melach Mishta Gadol. The pasuk continues that the pasuk continues like this. The whole pasuk goes that the Vayasa Melach Mishta Gadol l'chosar ba'avada. The king made a big party for all his noblemen and his servants. Es Mishta Esther, feast of Esther. V'hanochal amadines Esther. He made a relaxation of taxes for the provinces. Vayitin Matis Kiyad Melach, and he gave presents according to the king's abilities. What was going on with that? It's like this. Achashverosh really was really curious to know what nation is Esther from, and she wouldn't tell. So he decided to worm it out of her. Oven Mishti Yavala, he made a party, it's in her name. The famous party being done in your name, won't you do me a favor then and tell me? Vala Galila, and she still wouldn't tell her. Dolly Kraga, he reduced the taxes, and so Vala Galila, she wouldn't tell him, even though he could have, he probably told her, you know, if you tell me what nation I'm from, I'll give that particular nation an even greater reduction in taxes. Still, she wouldn't tell. Shadar Pardishni, he sent out presents in her name, Vala Galila, and she still wouldn't tell him. That's why the pasuk is mentioning all those things. He was so infatuated with her that he was willing to overlook it. But then the pasuk continues. We covered Sulis Chenis. When the virgins were gathered together a second time, and the pasuk says, "Mordechai Yoshe Bishara Malach." Mordechai is sitting in the king's gate. Now, what does one have to do with the other? So it means Ozel Shokel Eitzim Mordechai. It means Achashverosh went to get advice by Mordechai. What do I do? How do I get the secret out of her? Mordechai tells her, "Omar, listen. Ein Isha Miskana El B'Yerech Kavrata. A woman gets jealous by the thigh of her friend." Meaning, in other words, like if she sees that she's going to have a rival. For you, you know, then that may make her spill the beans. So go find another rival, go find another possible rival queen, and that may make her tell. Wait, one second. And even so, she wouldn't tell him. Because the next passage says, still Esther would not tell. Now, yeah, why is Mordechai giving such advice? Mordechai himself really was not certain about the whole thing. I mean, this is very weird that a Jewish woman like this, especially she's married and officially the thing was only supposed to be for Psulos, etc. How did she wind up with a low life like Achashverosh? He decided, you know what? Let's see if it's really Minashamayim. If Achashverosh ends up picking somebody else, okay, then you know, then first of all, Esther's free to come back home to me, which is a little better for her and for me. And second of all, we'll know that she wound up, you know, Achashverosh couldn't find anybody else who he liked as much as Esther. So Mordechai realizes, you know what? It's Minashamayim. There's obviously a purpose there, and what the purpose was, they found out 5 years later. Amar Abulazar. My dichtiv, now, the Gemara is going to talk about a little bit, to digress, to talk about this idea that Esther wouldn't tell the secret. So, Amar Rav Elazar, my dichtiv, the pasuk says, lo yigra mitzadik enav, the Eivishter will not remove his, will not take away his eyes from the tzadik. Meaning, Rashi says, that the Eibishter looks after the good things that Tzaddikim have done. It may be a long time, but eventually the Eibishter will pay back for the good they did. What does that mean? The schar tznius shahitza baba Rachel, in the schar of the tznius that Rachel had, which the Gemara is going to explain in a minute, how zoch to yatzer mena shol, she had this chus that shol, who came from her, and who also knew how to keep a secret, as we'll see, or was schar tznius shahitza shahitza baba shol, and because of the tznius that shol had, zoch to yatzer mena Esther, then he had this chus in turn that Esther came out of him. So the Eibishter kept in mind Rachel's good deeds and paid her back hundreds of years later by making shol her descendant, and similarly with shol and Esther. Marsha says a little bit differently. Marsha says the meaning of the pasuk, the Medrash also in Bereishis Rabbah, also explains it this way, that the word Einav means similar to, like Cain. So it means, L'yigra mitzadik Einav, means the Eibishter that makes sure that a tzadik has descendants who are similar to him. Whatever particular good midah, the tzadik, was exceptional, and the Eibishter makes sure that his descendants are capable of that as well. Well, my tznius tells us about Rachel. So, what particular tznius do we find in Rachel? Just the pasuk says when Yaakov met Rachel, Vayaged Yaakov leRachel ki achi aviyahu. Yaakov told Rachel that he is her father, that he is her father's brother. What do you mean? V'chi achi aviyahu? He's not her father's brother. He's not Laban's brother. He's Rachel's cousin. He's the son of Laban's sister. Laban's sister is Rivka. Yaakov is her son. And, okay, before I should say, I mean, okay, you can find sometimes the word achi can mean little, doesn't just mean a brother, it can mean a relative, but he continues, v'chi ben Rivkahu. So obviously the achi aviyah has to be more than that. It means like this. Ela amala, it means like this. A lot of times, and we're going to have that further on when we get to Haman's thing also, a lot of times what the Gemara will do when we find extra things like that in a pasuk, in a conversation, the Gemara will assume that there's another side of the conversation which is not recorded, but we can deduce it from what the person said in the part. It's sort of like when you hear one side of a phone conversation, sometimes you can figure out what the other side was. Similarly here. What happened? Ela Amala, Yaakov asked her, Mintzav Asli, will you marry me? Amr Le'ein, she says, sure, I'd like to. Miu Abba Ramahu, but you should know, my father in Lavan is a cheater. V'layachal, saying, you're not going to be able to outwit him. Amalah, so he tells her, don't worry. Achiv Anu Abba Ramahu, I'm his brother, that's what he means, Achiv Avirhu, I'm his brother, in other words, I'm his equal in being able to trick. Which actually, there's an interesting... Well, the Gemara is going to ask in a second how does Tzadik trick people, but actually there's an interesting thing that's brought from the Chozim of Lublin that we see from this. A Tzadik cannot allow himself to be limited by his natural tendencies. Yaakov's natural tendencies is Ishtam. And Rashi says in the Pasuk, Ishtam means he's not sharp enough to be able to cheat people. But where it's necessary, he has to be able to know to use that as well. On the lay, so Rachel tells him, what do you mean? We showed it Tzadikim Sagui B'Yam Yusa. Are Tzadikim allowed to act in a dishonest way? And he says yes, like the pasuk says, inover titavar, with the clean person, with the honest person, you act cleanly. Vim ikish, and with the crooked person, titapel, you act crookedly. So yeah, if Lavan is gonna try to cheat me, then I'm gonna go and cheat him right back. Amalah, so he asks her, Nuru my Ram Yosef. So you're telling me your father's a cheater, and therefore I'm not gonna end up marrying you. What does he intend to do? Amrle, she tells him, Isli achta the Krishamino, you have an older sister. He's not going to allow me to be married before you, before her. As Taka eventually happened, of course, Loyalta Kenu Kamenu. She has to tell him. She has to tell him the facts so he knows to watch out. It's not Lashon Hara against Leia, it's Lashon Hara against Lavan. What do? You have to warn him, you know. I mean, think of it, you know, if you knew somebody who was about to invest with Bernie Madoff, would it be Lashon Hara to tell him? You know,
she's obligated to see what Avin
M. But she's also obligated to warn Yaakov to know what he's getting himself into. If you look in Hilchos Lashon Hara and Sefer Chofetz Chaim in particular, there are cases where you have to tell somebody where it's for a constructive purpose. This is one of them.
How do you tell Lashon Hara?
No.
When you're dating, you have to tell about different things and that. You don't have to tell it right away, but yeah, you have to tell
us these stories. Yes. So, what Yaakov did is he gave her simonim. He gave her secret code that when it comes to the wedding night, you'll tell me them, and if you don't tell me, then I know it's not you. I know it's Leah. The Medrash explains how is he not going to know because by the chuppahs in those days, nowadays also the kala is veiled. So not necessarily under the chuppah is he going to know who is, you know, who's who, but like this. So he has a password. So the interesting thing that some of the Foshim say, the password he gave her is a special three mitzvahs of women, Chalam, Nida, and Adlakas Haner. And he told her those three mitzvahs. Anyway. Kimotaleo, yeah, comes the night of the wind. Now we're going to get to how we see that Rachel sneezed the kite. When it came the night of the wedding, Rachel said, the fact is, my father is trying to substitute Leah for me. Now my sister is going to be embarrassed. So, Misartinu Niala, she gave her the secret code. She gave her the password. So now Leah is able to tell it to Yaakov, and Yaakov didn't realize. That's why the Pasuk says, Rashi explains over there on the Pasuk, Vayihi baboker vayihi Leah. Last night she wasn't Leah because Yaakov thought she was Rachel because she gave him the password. Only in the morning when he wakes up and he realizes it's Leah. Just not to embarrass her. That's the sneers that we're talking about. That she had the discretion to be able to keep that secret and not to embarrass her sister. It's not even Rashi. The Gemara over here says, "Behind the Chiba, by Hiba Boker, by Hine Hilea." Thus it says, in the morning she was Leah. What we call that Ash to Lav Leah? So what? Up until now she wasn't Leah. Ella, what it means is Mitoch Simonim Shemasu Rachel Leah. Because of these Simonim that Rachel gave to Leah, Lo Yavayada Ad Ashta. He did not know until now. So therefore, Rachel, who excelled in this thing of sneers, was Zoychat Shol, that Shol was her descendant. Which, as the Gemara is going to say now, Shol was also exceptional in that. An interesting idea, by the way, that's brought on this is, it comes out then that when Rachel, that night when Yaakov was intimate with Leah, he thought he's with Rachel. Reuben was born from that. But because of that, therefore, that's one reason why when Reuben ended up losing his Bechira, who did he lose it to? Yosef. Who is Rachel's firstborn. Because Yaakov was under the impression that he's actually conceiving Yosef at that point, not Reuben. Yeah. Okay, what about Shaul? What happened to Shaul? The Machni is close to the Shaul. The Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes over there, how did Shmuel and Shaul meet in the first place? Shaul was looking for some lost donkeys of his father's. He's wandering all over the country. Finally, his servant tells him, let's go to the Roya, let's go to Shmuel. And the Abishah tells Shmuel, this person is coming to you, you're going to anoint him as king. So Shmuel anoints him as king. Shaul goes back home. And his father tells him, don't worry, the donkeys have been found. Not his father, his uncle. His uncle asks him, where have you been? Is everything okay? And Shaul says, yeah, Haggid Lano told us that the donkeys have been found. But the puzzle continues. He did not tell him about the kingship, which Shmuel had told him. Because Shmuel had told him to keep it under wraps for now, and Shaul did. That he's been crowned, that he's been anointed king. Yeah.
He would have helped him.
So therefore, we see that Shaul was able to keep a secret, and therefore Zachav Yasemena Esther. Therefore, he was Zeicha that Esther came from him, which, as we said, that Ain't Esther Magedes. I go to Bach adds that in the Gemara over here that we see that Esther was exceptional, and that also that she was able to keep that secret. And you realize how long she was keeping that secret. You know, the beauty contest began right after Vashti was killed, the Shnat Shalosh, in the third year of Achashverosh. Till she finally, till she was finally picked as queen 4 years later. And then then it's another 5 years until the next Purim. And all that time, she's keeping this under wraps. There, Amar Rabbi Elazar also says, speaking of this pasuk from Eeyore that we quoted before, La Yugra Mitzadik Einov, Kshakarish Baruch Hu Posek Gdula Adam, when the Eivishter decides that a person should have greatness, Posek Levonav of Levonav Ad Seif Kardoris, the Eivishter also decides it that his children and his children's children will have it until the end of all generations. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, by Yeshivim Lanetzach by Yigbahu Vagayma, the same pasuk we said by Yigram Tzadik Einov continues by Yeshivim Lanetzach, he makes them established forever by Yigbahu, and they become great. But being the Higgis Daito, but if the descendants then become proud of it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashvilev, and the Eibishter lowers them. Shenema, the next pasuk continues in Eeyore, V'im Osurim Bazikim, but if they're tied up in chains, and the pasuk continues, V'chavlei Oni, in ropes of poverty. Okay, it can end up happening that they're in chains and poor and whatever because they were Yigbahu, because the last word of the pasuk, Yigbahu, they weren't just high in position, they became high in their own estimation. Marshall says a little differently. Asurim implies it did something asur. It's asur to be a Bhagaiva. So therefore, they wind up with Zikin. The Chassam Sofer says an interesting idea on this. He says, what do you mean that when the Eivishter decides Gdula for a person, then he decides that it should be for all his descendants? We know in general that when a person, it's in Halacha actually, when a person has a position, the Halacha, his children are the ones to inherit it. The kingship goes from father to son, generally. The Kohen Gadolah, any other position of leadership, generally goes from father to son. So what do you need? A special tzibur from the Eibishter for that. The answer is, the Chassam Sefer says, what the Eibishter is poisik, the Eibishter arranges that the person should have children who are suitable to succeed him in the role. Because that rule, that the role goes from father to son, is only if the son is Mamala Makom Avosav, if he's suitable to fill his father's shoes. So the Eibishter arranges that a tzaddik, that a person who has gula, should have such children, and then that, therefore that way they'll be able, as according to the way halacha goes, to inherit his position. The pasuk says that Ma'ama Mordechai Esther Oisa, that Esther would, even in the palace, would do according to the word of Mordechai. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi, it doesn't just mean the fact that she wasn't telling, because that already says earlier in the pasuk. So it has to mean something else. It means that she still kept halacha. She would show her blood of nida to the chachamim to tell, like people do nowadays. You take to the rav with a shaila. Is this dam nida, or you know, am I nida or am I tahor? Now why is that? Let's learn the next line of the gemara and then we'll see. Kasher ha'isa ba'amna itay. The pasuk continues that she kept on doing as she was when she was together with, when she was ba'amna, when she was in a reliable relationship with Mordechai. Amar Rav ba'alima mishmei d'rav. It means shahaisa emedes mecheka shel Achashverosh. It means she'd stand up from the embrace of Achashverosh, v'tevelas, and she'd tovel v'yeshevas mecheka shel Mordechai, and she'd come, and then she'd come to Mordechai's lap. In other words, she continued. She was still married to Mordechai, like we said on Amud Aleph. She continued, when she was able to get out of the palace, she'd continue returning to Mordechai to have relations with him.
Who do you have relations with?
So what's the Tevelis? So what's the Tevelis? So some of the Forshim say it goes back to what we just said. She was showing Dam Nida, so therefore she knows when she's Nida, when she's not. She would make sure to Tovel before she, when it comes to Achashverosh, she doesn't have a choice. Achashverosh wants her all the time anyway, regardless of what time of the month it is. Before she would go back to Mordechai, she would make sure she's taught her.
She's not obligated when she's with
us. Some of the Forshim talk about that. I think the Menoit Halevi talks about that. Maybe she was trying. She couldn't. Maybe because Achashverosh won't necessarily allow it. But she was. You know, there is maybe an Indian actually to even if she's with a guy to try and make sure at least that she's not Nida, and therefore she'd be checking on that.
By doing it, she would have revealed where she comes from.
No. No, it's not obvious when she goes to the mikveh. She can do it, whatever. She's going to bathe, you know.
She goes to
a river or whatever, yeah. The other explanation is that this tevelas is not necessarily for nida. It just means, Rashi says it wasn't mitzat nida, it was just machmas mils. It would be a repulsive thing that after being with Achashverosh, she's right away going to go to Mordechai. So she would tovel, like, to, so to speak, to cleanse herself from that before she'd go to Mordechai. And some before she also talk about there's an idea that the midrabban and goyim are considered zavim, so therefore she would tovel before she goes back to Mordechai in order that she's not mitame him. Tosfos asked an interesting question, though, with that. If she's having relations with Achashverosh and also with Mordechai, okay, she's not also to Mordechai because effectively it's like she's being raped by Achashverosh. She's an anusa.
Yeah,
but so therefore she's not also to Mordechai, fine. But Tosfos asked the question, how, if she becomes pregnant, how does she know whose baby it is? Normally the halacha is that taka, a woman is not allowed to, even after a woman is widowed or divorced or whatever, she has to wait 3 months before she remarries in order to be able to tell. No, that's what we're saying, because every time she's with Achashverosh, it's ba'onus. It's against her will. It's the fundamental equivalent of a woman nowadays, in any time, being raped, and then she still mutters to her husband, and her husband's a kohen. Mordechai's not a kohen. Yes. She's a
Muslim. When a woman is raped,
she's still mutters to her husband, as long as her husband is not a kohen.
Right.
Yeah, so then there you go. Mordechai is from Shevet Binyamin. So therefore, he's allowed to be married to an anusa. But Tosfos asks the question, what do you do about children? So Tosfos says that when Tosfos says that she was mishamish b'moich, meaning she used some kind of contraceptive. Who, with who? Some mafarshim say that it means when she was with Achashverosh. Others say when she was with Mordechai.
She did end up having a child.
Whose child? Most of the Russians say it was a child. She was with Mordechai, she'd use a contraceptive, the way the Gemara is saying over here. became pregnant from Shvedish. Or eventually the Gemara is going to point out, it's going to happen in a few days, the Gemara is going to tell that eventually the Chashanavat became a point when she had to go willingly to Hashemedesh to ask him to save the Jewish people. At that point, if he propositions her, let's go to bed, she has no choice. At that point, it's not Ba'onis anymore. At that point, there's a degree of Ratzin. So she Taka becomes at that point also to Mordechai. After that, there's no reason to be Mashamish for Mordechai anymore. After that, maybe she's when she became pregnant and gave birth to Dayavish.
So
according to that, it would mean that Dayavish is Esther's son. He was Jewish. There are other Mephoshim. I think there's a Zoyar, I think, that says that actually it was never Esther that was with Achashverosh anyway. It was a Shed every time that Achashverosh wanted. It was a Shed who would go in there looking like Esther. So therefore, Dayavish may have been the son of that, and he would have been a Goy. But there is an interesting idea. I think the Tosfos Rosh says that, in fact, Dayavish was Mordechai's son. Why do we always call him Achashverosh's son? Because he was raised in the palace as Achashverosh's son. Yeah. But biologically, according to the Tosfos Rosh, he was Mordechai's son.
Why didn't the Yiddish make a nest like he did with Sarah and Hannah?
That was a one-time thing. But again, according to this, it's an ongoing thing. And according to this, Mishamesh is B'mayich.
Well, Esther and Nicholas is from Mordechai. The anger.
What?
So what you say is the real Esther is connected to Nicholas with the anger Mordechai.
That she really... Next, the pasuk continues. By Yomim Mahem Mordechai Yosef B'Shar HaMelech. In those days, when Mordechai was sitting in the king's gate, Kotzaf Bigson V'Teresh. Bigson and Teresh became angry, and they wanted to assassinate Achashverosh. So Amar Abchir Ba'Abba Amar Bi'echanan. You find that Hiktzif Hakadosh Baruch Hu Odin Alavadav. You find one time in history that the Eibishter made a master, a king, angry at his servant, Lachos Tzayin Tzadik, in order to accomplish the need of a tzadik, what a tzadik wants. Umanu Yosef. That's Yosef. Shenem V'Shamitan. Now Ivri V'Gomer. We find Achashverosh got not Achashverosh. Paray got married at the Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Oithim and clapped them in jail. And what happened? They were in a position then eventually to that because through them, through their dreams, Yosef got out of jail. And you have
vice.
That's why the Ebishter did that whole thing. And similarly, Avodim Aladinin, we find the Ebishter made servants angry at their master, also lost his nest for tzaddik, also in order to do a nest for tzaddik, Umanu Mordechai. Just did by Avodah Devil Mordechai, in this case, Bigson and Teresh got angry at Achashverosh and wanted to assassinate him. It ended up being for the good of Mordechai, because that way Mordechai's name was written down, and later on in the Megillah it helps. Yeah. Now, what's going on with Bigson and Teresh? Amar Rabbi Yechonon, Bigson and Teresh shnei Tausiim habu. Bigson and Teresh were two people from Taus, from Tursi. This is the name of place. Vayim Masapin, Belosh and Tursi. So they were speaking in their native language of Tursi. Va'omrim, and they said to each other, from when this woman has come, meaning Esther, lo ra'inu shena be'einenu. We've never had a decent night's sleep, because all night Achashverosh wants to be with her. Having relations makes the person thirsty, so he's constantly wanting water. But, yeah.
What is big for
being used for? And Bigs and Teresh weren't necessarily big people. They were Shemir and Asaf, we're saying. They were the servants of the they were guards, whatever. So Boyo Vanatal Eros the Safel, so they said, come, let's put poison in his cup, Kadeshiyomo, so he'll die. But they did not know that Mordechai was one of the Chachamim who was in the Sanhedrin and Lushkas Agazis. So he knew 70 languages because that was one of the qualifications to be in the Sanhedrin. So therefore he can understand what they're saying in this Lashon Tursi. Amaloi, so one of them says to the other one, well, how are we going to do that? V'aloi mishmartu, mishmartu chashaveh. You and I don't have the same mishmar. Which Rashi says that means we have different jobs around the palace. How are we going to coordinate? Marshal says differently, that mishmartu, mishmartu means we don't work at the same time. We don't have the same shift. We clock in and out at different times. How are we going to be together? And Marshal explains, you have to, because it's going to take time to go and get the poison. You can't keep it around the palace. Somebody might find it and you'll be in danger. You have to go at some point when you're on shift and then sneak out for a little while and get it. But you and I don't work different shifts. How is that going to work? And then when it comes to putting poison into the cup also, Marshal explains, the point is they can't put it in ahead of time. Same thing, it might be discovered. They have to put it in at the last moment. That means both of them have to be there. One to offer the cup and the other one to put the poison in. So how are we going to work this? Amalai, so the other one says, Ani eshma mishmartu mishmartuch. Don't worry, I will do my job and yours. So therefore, in other words, I'll cover for you. Thus the pasuk says the matter was looked for and it was found, meaning what was looked for, what did they find? And they found that they're not on duty at the expected time or doing the expected job, but they should, so they realized something's fishy and they uncovered the whole plot.
Who was that?
Whoever the people around the palace. I mean, what did it say? Mordechai told Esther. Esther told the king Mordechai's name, and they checked it out. How did they substantiate it? Mordechai's saying very nice. Who says it's true? They found the timesheets don't match up. Yeah.
Mordechai overheard all this conversation.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
It was there.
Yeah. Next, the pasuk says, beginning of Parak Gimel of the Megillah, Achar Advarim Eila. After these matters, then Haman was promoted. Achamai, what do you mean after? What's the connection between Bigson and Teresh being their plot and Haman being elevated? Amar Rava, Achar Shabara, Achar Shabara, Rufu Lamaka. It means after the Eibishter created the remedy for the wound. In other words, first comes the story with Bigson and Teresh, which that way Mordechai's name is written down, is brought to the king's attention, and later on that became important in the Megillah. And only then did the Eibishter make that Haman will be elevated and the Sarah will begin. But first you have to have the whole story. The Eibishter never
punishes the Jewish people unless he first creates for them a healing. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Kirapi Yisrael." As I heal Yisrael, the Niglav and Ephraim, then the Aveda of Ephraim will be revealed and they'll be punished for it. But first comes the Refuah. Abel Umos Oylem Enekim. Ephraim means the Jewish people collectively. They're called Ephraim after the Ten Shvatim.
There was a specific story about
no, it's talking in general, the Avedis that the Ten Shvatim were doing, but yeah.
And this is also like with the Holocaust, that there were already Jews who
in other places, that's true, yeah. Abel Umos Ha'olam Einu Kein, but with the Goyim it's not like that. Maka Oysen Vachkach Goyer Lahem Refuah. First the Eibishter hits them, and then he creates for them a Refuah. Shenemer V'Nogach Hashem Es Mitzrayim Nogach V'Rofo. As the pasuk says, Hashem will strike Mitzrayim, striking and healing. So first comes the striking, then comes the healing. Why? One reason is because when the Eibishter strikes the Jewish people, it's in order to get us to do tshuva. He knows we're going to do tshuva, so therefore he creates the healing first. The Goyim, the striking is not necessarily that they're going to do tshuva. Also, the striking might be to destroy them entirely, because the Goyim don't have a thing that they're going to last forever, necessarily. So therefore, they're struck, and if they do tshuva, then the Eibishter will deal with the healing. There is another explanation that Mefarshim say, the healing we're talking about over here that came before is not just the story of Bigson and Teresh, but also the story from the first parak in the Megillah, where Haman gives the advice to have Vashti executed and so forth. One of the ideas is, Mefarshim explained, that part of Haman's advice over there is, you know, right now when you had to figure out what to do with Vashti, you have to call together the seven of us. Don't do that anymore, he says to Achashverosh. Rule of a monarch. You want to do something, do it right on the spot. You don't have to call together your advisors for it. This ended up biting Haman because afterwards, that was his own downfall in the end. Because what happens is that later on in the Megillah, Ahasuerus gets mad at Haman right away. It's true, although he doesn't have to call his advisors together. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's also the reform before the Makkah. Yeah.
Wow,
Pasuk says, "Vayivas be'ain of l'shloach yob b'mordechai levado." It was contemptible in Haman's eyes to just stretch out his hand against Mordechai. The pasuk says that first it says he was angry at Mordechai, then at Am Mordechai, and then at all the Jewish people. So what does that mean? Amar Rava, but chilav Mordechai levada. First he was thinking to get back at Mordechai himself, or l'soich b'Am Mordechai, then at the people of Mordechai, umanu rabbanon, who are the people of Mordechai, the people who are close to him, the Zman HaChamim, or l'soich b'chala Yehudim, and later on he decided, you know what, let's get everybody. Pasuk says, hippil pur hu agodol, he made the pur, which is a godol, to decide the day. Tana, we learn in a brayta, kiven shenafal pur b'chodesh Adar, when the lot came out in month of Adar, samach simchon gadol, he was very happy. V'amar nafal li pur b'yarach shenasva Moshe, he says the lot has come out for me in the month when Moshe passed away. But v'lo ha'yideh, shebeshuva Adar met, shebeshuva Adar noled. He did not know that Moshe passed away on Zayin Adar, but he was also born on Zayin Adar. And Rashi says, therefore, the birth can be mechaper for the Misa. A couple of places in the Kutta Sichas where the Rebbe explains, one of them is in Chedek Kazayim, and another one where the Rebbe explains what does it mean, the birth of Mechaper for the Misa means that the Misa of a Tzaddik is a sad thing, but on the other hand, the Misa of a Tzaddik, so after a Tzaddik passed away, like we said by Yaakov ben Olay Meis, even after he's seemingly dead, he's still alive. Same thing with Moshe, the birth of the Tzaddik, the fact that a Tzaddik is born into the world, that overcomes the negativity of the Misa. Yeshnei Amecha, the pasuk starts telling about Haman's accusations against the Jews. There was one nation, There was nobody who knew how to say Lashon Hara as good as Haman. And again, here's an example where we have only one side of the conversation. We have Haman's speech to Achashverosh, but from it we can deduce the conversation back and forth between them. How so? Haman comes to Achashverosh, he says, come, let's get rid of them. Achashverosh says, Mr. Pinim Elikov, I'm afraid of their God. I don't want him to do to me like he did to the earlier ones, Pareis and Cherev, etc. Amalei, so Haman tells him, don't worry, Yoshnu min ha-mitzvah. They're asleep from mitzvah. Yeshne, we're dashing Melosh and Yoshnu, they're asleep. Amalei, okay, but Isbu Rabbanim, there are Rabbanim among them, they keep mitzvah. Amalei, Amachadhe, no, it's all one nation. Which either it means, some of Farshim say it means that Rabbanan aren't keeping the mitzvahs either, or it means Koyso are Raven Zelazeth, so that Rabbanan are considered part of the collective Jewish people. If the rest of them are doing wrong, then the Rabbanan are caught up in it also, or they're not paying attention to the Rabbanan anyway, whatever. You're going to argue, I'm going to be making like a bold spot in your kingdom, like there's going to be a huge empty space in your kingdom where the Jews were. Don't worry, they're scattered among all the nations, like you're not even going to notice when they're missing. You're going to say, okay, but I'm getting benefit from them. No, mefored. He says they're spread. It means mefored in Russian kipridazu, like a mule, chain oisaperis, which doesn't produce any offspring. So like you're not gaining anything from the Jewish people. The Shema Tomer Ikamadinsumina, you might say, okay, maybe there's not a whole huge area that you said they're scattered. Maybe there's at least one city or one small province or whatever that's all Jews. So that'll be empty. Or Marshall says, maybe you'll think, okay, instead of exterminating all the Jews, maybe let's just gather them together in one city. No. They're in all the countries of your kingdom. So like, there's not even one single city or country or whatever that's mostly Jews. And according to Marshall's explanation, it's like they're so scattered, it'll be impossible to gather them all in one place. You may as well just get rid of them.
How can you? That's the point.
Yeah, that's it. Because you have the goyim around. That's why he says, send out letters to all the goyim. Next, with Dafayim Shonis Mikolam, he says their laws are different than all other people's. What does that mean? They're like Achleminon, they don't eat to get from our food, but like Nasminon, like Minsvilan, they don't marry our women, they don't allow their women to marry us. That's Dafayim Melachain Moisim, it says they don't keep the laws of the king. Demakila Kulishata Bashihi Pihi. They use up the whole year with excuses. Shihi Pihi stands for Shabbos Hayyim Pesach Hayyim. Like here, today is Shabbos, today is Pesach, we can't work. So like therefore they're not paying taxes, they're not doing work for the king, etc. Because they're always using an excuse, it's Shabbos or a Yom Tov. Yeah, basically. And v'la melech en shei v'la nicham, he says for the king it's not worthwhile to leave him. Meaning the ochel v'shosu m'vazu v'lamachus. When they eat and drink, they're actually making fun of the king. Think of it. V'afilu noivul z'vul v'kotzeh shalachem. If a fly falls into a Jew's cup, zoko he'll throw out the fly v'sheseo, but he'll drink the cup. But if you, your majesty, touches a Jew's cup, he'll throw it onto the ground, because and he won't drink it. So like they consider you less than a fly. And he continues, so you see from this the kind of Lashon Hara Nick that you see what an effective demagogue Haman was, yeah. He continues, if it's good for the king, he should write to destroy them. And he says, I will pay 10,000 kikar of silver to the royal treasury. So Amr Shlokh is Golub Yadrul Olam, the Avishta knew full well, Sha'afid Haman Lushkov Shkolam Israel, that Haman in the future is going to be offering Shkolim to buy off the Jewish people off Achashverosh. Lafika Khikhtim Shiklan the Shkolov. Therefore the Avishta arranged that the Jewish people's Shkolim come before Haman. Behind it is now. Thus we learned at the beginning of Shkolim. On the first of Adar, they would announce that we have to start collecting Maksa Shekel and also that we have to get rid of Kalayim. So therefore, the Haman's Zero was meant to take place on Yud Gimel Adar. The Eivishter arranged 1,000 years before that from Rosh Chodesh Adar, already the Jews are collecting Shkolim, so that their Shkolim come before Haman's and they can counteract them. Yeah, they're before the Maksa, that's an example of that, yeah.